I'm Dr. Stephanie Munt.
And I'm Dr. Ellie Summers.
And this is Two Women Running Their Mouths, a podcast for women who run by women who run. Our 80-20 rule, 80% dishing, 20% running. Welcome back, week two of, or episode two of season two of Two Women Running Their Mouths. How are you doing today, Ellie?
I'm doing pretty well, Steph. A little tired this morning, but I'm good. How are you?
Good. Wednesdays are good days. I like Wednesdays a lot.
Yeah, it's like the middle of the week and you're just trying to get over that hump and move on to the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, and I get to talk to you on Wednesdays, so.
That's true. Wednesdays are always a good day to schedule a call with your favorite bud and friend.
Exactly. You look forward to it, and it gets you through the week. So
it does. It really, really does. These have been great calls.
Yes, they have. So This week we want to continue after last week we talked about body image and our own experiences with it. This week we want to continue that conversation into kind of the clinical space and how clinicians may inadvertently, I don't know about the word contribute, but how important our words are, not only in impacting people's pain, but also their image of themselves and how strong and capable they are, and how we might be able to alleviate that or recognize where we're making errors and think more critically about what we're saying to help empower people more than bring them down about their body.
Yeah. You know, I think this is a topic where people live in so much shame already. And in healthcare, for the past, maybe, I don't know, 10 to 15 or maybe even 20 years, I don't know exactly. We have been, I think, in the physical therapy space and the wellness spaces and fitness spaces, really pushing this narrative and message that in order to achieve health, air quotes around health, you have to be a certain body shape and a body size. And these messages persist today in our profession of physical therapy, and certainly within the coaching and wellness spaces as well. And I think that Steph and I, our hope today is really to challenge some of those biases and maybe get at the heart of how to work with individuals and people and not create more shame around their body. And as physical therapists, I think that can be really tricky because our entire profession is based around the body and how the body works and what's going on in the body and what, you know, why people have pain. And so sometimes it can get a little bit lost in translation on why people experience the things they do. And I think Steph and I really want to try and tackle this topic, which will be a little bit challenging, but because there's a lot of nuance and I don't know, maybe just unclear, unclear ways to handle it, I guess you could say.
Yes, but that's absolutely not black and white.
Yeah, yeah.
Of living in the gray and getting comfortable with that.
Right, right.
So ways to get more comfortable with that.
Right. So I want to talk a little bit about body size initially, because I think that this is a very prominent explanation that clinicians use, doctors, physical therapists, healthcare professionals use to explain why somebody has pain. And I'm curious to know from you, Steph, how you might approach somebody who has been told that their weight or their body size is because or is the cause to their pain.
I'm glad you brought that up. I actually just was speaking with a woman about this with knee pain. I think the way that what I've noticed, the way that people might bring this up is they bring it up before you. And Not that I really don't, but it's almost like, let me rush to this so they know that I need to lose weight.
Yeah.
And that just kind of like I try to explore what, like, okay, what do you think, you know, if this pain started, you know, the past couple months, as you happen to, like, let's kind of look at this timeline, as you happen to ramp up your activity, do you think that maybe it's an alternative? So I think kind of just trying to explore what the other possibilities might be that are going on, and actually ask, like, do you want to lose weight?
Yeah. And
yes. Awesome. That's a great goal. I'm not the person to help you with that aspect, but I know that we can address your knee pain without probably going through a weight loss program. And that, I think, for some, I've kind of seen some almost like a sigh of relief, because I feel like they're probably getting told by many other people or even family, friends, that especially knee pain, I think you hear it the most with knee pain. Yeah. Well, if you just lost some weight, then that would go away. And, you know, I think there are studies that show after a certain amount of weight or BMI or whatever it is, there is more knee pain, but there's so many factors again that play into that. Like, are we also seeing less activity? We know that inactivity leads to worse joint health. So there's just a lot of factors. And the last thing I want to do is add shame to what they're already feeling.
Right. So yeah. You know, I completely agree with that. I think a lot of people will bring it up early on, either on their intake forms or in a conversation with you, that they've been told that they know they need to lose weight, that they've maybe tried to do it before. And probably the fact that they're in your office means that something's not working, and that they're still having pain. And I think it's unfortunate that we've used weight to explain a person's pain, in part because I think it's a lazy way to explain why a complex human being experiences pain. But I think it also is a little bit of a slippery slope. It professes this narrative that if you lose weight, you'll be pain-free. Mm-hmm. And that is not true. That is not true. So, you know, and I think that this has a lot of crossover with body image, because as we might suspect, people who come into our offices experiencing pain of any kind are automatically likely to have insecurities about what's going on in their body and why. And I think that the crossover, again, gets a little bit weird, because you don't want to presume that somebody has body image issues, especially if they're living in a larger body. So I think as clinicians, one of the best ways to handle this is to really ask questions, as Steph alluded to. What do you think? Do you think that by losing X amount of weight, you will be pain-free? Or do you think that by losing X amount of weight, you'll suddenly be a happy person? Asking these questions can really open up, I think, a person's perception of what they're experiencing and why. Because so often, these individuals who are overweight or in larger bodies have tried to lose weight already, have been told by provider time and time and time again that their weight is the cause of their pain. And meanwhile, they're screaming at the top of their lungs, like in your office, I mean, not literally screaming, but likely they're there because they're still struggling with it. And so I think it comes down to really strong listening skills and withholding judgment and criticism for a person in that space. Mm-hmm. I also think that as physical therapists, part of how we can contribute to body image issues or perceptions of, I'm going to use air quotes here, flawed bodies, is by highlighting particular areas of a person's body in a way that portrays danger or, air quotes, flaws. Mm-hmm. I want to hear from you, Steph, on what you think some of those contributions can be.
I think, you know, if you've listened to our podcast before, some of these things might come up again, but now we're talking about different impacts. But I do think the testing that we do, and again, this is tough as physical therapists, because we are doing all of this
assessment,
testing, evaluating,
looking at your body, and
seeing if we can move things, which we really aren't doing much of.
More on that another time.
Yeah, pushing on things, and it feels like a full on like body analysis, right?
Yeah,
and so I think some of the ways that we might do that is by commenting. I think it's totally fair. We need to do some sort of assessment, but the comments like, oh, that side's weak. Oh,
right.
That glute's not firing. These things that are like, oh, something's wrong with that. Something's just keep adding it to the list. And then right. By the time that you're done, you've got this full on list of things that are quote wrong with you. And people feel like they need to be fixed or put back together.
And yeah.
That's not an empowering way to walk out of an office.
No, not at all. I mean, I used to work at a sports medicine clinic that worked primarily with pediatrics. And we would get kids in there who have been to the doctor, and like a 12-year-old girl who is told, you know, you have knock knees, right? All this young girl is thinking now at this point, well, maybe she doesn't have the critical thinking to break it down, but if she's told that at 12, she's likely going to be told it at 15 and then again at 21. And what does this reinforce for this young girl? That her body is, air quotes, wrong. That the way her body is made is not right and sets the stage for pain, for injury, for problems, quote, down the line, and a bunch of just bullshit, honestly, about a person's body. And so it's funny when we're working with people in pain, how quickly and easily these messages get spread throughout the medical system. So it's not just from a physical therapist, it's from the physical therapist, it's from their physician, it's from the parent who's making a comment about their body. It's from their friend who's like maybe poking fun of how their body moves. It's pervasive, quite frankly, the way that we set the stage for issues around a person's body image and their perception of what their body can handle, what it can't handle, how it adapts, and really how I'm going to just say this. This is like my internal narrative and the narrative that I use, how we create these feelings of fragility in people by talking about their body in a way that portrays that their body is not enough or not good enough exactly the way that it is.
Yeah. So as you know, I don't know how to follow that up, but how can we then go about changing that? You know, instead yes. of that language, what do you do to help people feel less fragile, to address those? Because, you know, when people come in and they are in that narrative, it can be difficult to change because now that's part of their identity, right? So you yes. can't just be like, oh, that's wrong. Your knock knees are no problem. Like, you've been living a lie. That's not going to work. You know,
sometimes it does.
You want to, yeah. Sometimes it can, and you want to, but how do you kind of sneak in and address that and lead them to believe that maybe they're not as fragile as they have been led to believe?
Yeah. So one of the questions that I'll ask people at times is I'll say to them, if they're coming with these types of explanations for their pain and what they've received from providers in the past, I can typically suspect, okay, this is something they believe now. This is like, they believe that their body is wrong, air quotes again, and that this is why they have pain. So I will ask them, at what point do you think your body will be strong enough, structurally sound enough, or, you know, aligned, again, air quotes around aligned enough that you'll be pain-free? And that question can stop people in their tracks a little bit. And I think it makes them evaluate some of what they've been told. Because honestly, we have to be able to challenge some of those thought processes in order to move a person in a more positive direction. And I think as a physical therapist, something that I'm consistently trying to do with everyone that steps into my office, because pretty much 100% of people that step into my office have some degree or some layer of body image, body perception issues that likely are contributing to their problem. I'm trying to break that down a little bit so I can build them up and lead them gently towards a path of body acceptance. Because at the end of the day, a young girl with knock knees is not a problem. It's not a problem. And the instant that you use a person's body structure and body shape to explain why they have pain, now it's something that they can't escape. Their body will always be shaped this way. It will always be structurally made the way that it's structurally made. And now we've created a scenario environment that they can't escape it. And they're always going to be trying to fix what they've been blessed with. Mm-hmm. So I really have kind of firm boundaries on not contributing to those issues in the space that I work in. And that means calling into question some of the things they've been told. Sometimes being really confident and assertive about it really can make a big difference. Mm-hmm. Calling something out and saying, I'm just going to tell you what I think here. What you've been told is bullshit. Sometimes that little piece of validation can help a person be like, thank God. Right. Thank God that somebody is telling me and validating the experience that I've had, because it's been miserable. I had a woman recently who her entire life has been told that she's got, you know, a rib flare. And it's like, now everything that she does, she's got to make sure to keep that rib flare in control or in check in order to live a pain-free life. And it creates a really hypervigilance around a person's body. So, you know, as clinicians, I typically try to coach people into thinking about focusing on the things you can change, right? So if somebody comes in and has a body structure that we learned in school is not normal, I'm going to like think back to my experiences in school. I was told in PT school, we did the plumb line test. Ellie has an anterior pelvic tilt.
Uh-oh. You are in for it.
Yeah. It's like these, I mean, yeah, you can't escape some of this stuff. You know, it's just, we have to focus on the things we can change. We cannot change a person's structure, period, end of sentence. So the instant that you embody that belief as a therapist, as a provider, really, then you can start being like, okay, we're not going to change this person's pronation in their feet. I don't need to talk about it as if it's a problem, mm-hmm. right? I can say, let's strengthen your feet. That's it. That's all I have to say. We strengthen your feet, you're going to feel better. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's good that we can't change structure, right? Like why would we want to? There's really exactly. no correlation to pain anyway, as much as we hear that.
Yes.
You know, there's so many different body types, and it's interesting to think back on like how these norms came to be, right? Like it was probably just a group of people, probably a certain demographic, that they averaged, and now those are our norms. And that is we're led to believe that the norms are then the ideal, yeah. which also is just not true.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and Steph, I'm sure you've been told things about your body throughout your years as a person who has had injury and pain experiences.
Absolutely. Yeah. There was a leg length discrepancy first with like a heel lift and all that jazz. And then I think I was lucky because I was so hard-headed and that I'm going to run no matter what you say. But yeah, for some people, the leg length discrepancy is a big one too. That's a fault. And right. Now you're always going to have some pain because you're a little bit lopsided. That one, the pronated feet is big. I have like bunions, hallux valgus, and I was told I was going to have foot pain. Never had foot pain, you know, there's, but these things can be so, like you said, they can become hyper. Yeah. You can become hypervigilant about it. And that anxious state, I think, can even sensitize your entire nervous system.
100%.
And have a direct contribution to increased pain experiences.
100%. That's, I mean, I don't think we can prove that yet necessarily, but I feel pretty confident that that is the case for a lot of people. I also think too, when it comes to making comments about body in general, we need to just not make any comments about body, like zero. I remember when I was in physical therapy, I was told at one point that I had the biggest VMO. And for those of you that don't know, the VMO is your, I'm going to use the word teardrop muscle on your quad that they'd ever seen. And at the time, luckily, I took that as a compliment, right? But so many people might not take that as a compliment. And we really need to be careful not to be presuming that we know that what we're about to say about a person's body is actually going to make them feel good. And truthfully, I think as it pertains to women, no comments about the body at all is probably preferable in terms of how it's shaped, what it looks like to you, all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, agreed. Even if you think that it seems positive.
Yeah. Now,
when I was, and I think we've talked about this before privately, but when I had started gaining weight after going through basically starting to recover from anorexia, anytime someone said, "You look healthy," was like struck fear in me. Because to me, that equaled you've gained weight. And so I think just, like you said, any comments about the body, whether they're well-intentioned or not, you need to kind of think about how those could be perceived. And, you know, you look happy, you look confident. All of those are perfectly acceptable substitutes if you need to say something or want to make a comment. You're glowing, something about their vibe or their, how they're presenting.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point and a good acknowledgement to how an individual person's perception is different than your own perception. And as it pertains to body, socially speaking, it can be incredibly difficult to not make comments on a person's body because there are times where people are intentionally attempting to change their body and will make very visible and noticeable changes. And then they'll get praise or comments about those changes. And then, you know, then it's like, okay, now my worth is because of these changes. Mm-hmm. It can be a very slippery slope when we know that a lot of women specifically deal with body image issues. Mm-hmm. No question that men deal with these issues as well. Absolutely no question.
But
from our perspective.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, if someone brings up to you, again, this is where it gets so nuanced, but if someone brings up to you that they have lost weight and that was a goal they were trying for, how, you know, phrasing like your response, like, wow, you worked really hard. You put these goals in place. That's awesome. Like talking about that effort rather than, oh my gosh, you look so fit now. Like, and that I think is the difference in having their value be placed on the end product versus praising like, wow, you had a goal and you accomplished something. And right. I think focusing on that process because it's obviously something important that you want to celebrate with them if that was important for them, of course.
Right.
It doesn't mean you have to ignore that if they bring it up, but focusing less on the outcome and more on that effort, I think is really important for people to hear.
Yeah. You know, and I think that that is a strong testament to being specific about the behaviors that somebody did that are likely maybe positive for them. Mm-hmm. And in the wellness sphere, you know, like population health. I mean, this whole movement towards population health is a little bit tricky because it professes that there's really good food that people need to be eating, that we need to be exercising, and really kind of sets the bar like, here's perfection. Here's how you attain perfection: by eating good foods, by being skinny, by doing CrossFit, by blah, blah, blah. And it's just an impossible standard. And when we focus on the body itself, I think it creates a negative relationship with the behavioral change and the wellness that we're trying to create in a person. And I love that you just mentioned this stuff, because I think it's about being specific to, you know, their movement from where they wanted to be, where they were, to where they wanted to be, mm-hmm. instead of being specific to the goal that they achieved in that process. I don't know if that makes very much sense, but, you know, acknowledging, as you say, that they're, you know, it's impressive that they worked so hard to get where they were wanting to go.
This ideal is, just like you said, it's impossible. And rather than comparing it to that, or just whatever that end result was, them making an effort to, just like you said, the behavior change, things that are important to them, that's where really where life is. And so if you can support them in that, I think that's just sets them up for more success in the future. And that's in, you know, any relationship. We're talking about PT here, but anywhere. If you teach, if you coach, like really anywhere, I think that's really important to start thinking about. And it's challenging because we're so used to praising the outcome and the win and just that end result, rather than really thinking about how much work went into it for most people and what they do to get there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like, you know, part of the reason that I praise people who miss a day is just because what that means to me is that they prioritized exactly what they needed on a given day. And I think that we're all constantly looking for forms of support and nurturing in our lives as it pertains to people in pain, people struggling with body image, or people who have been told things about their body that don't make them feel good. As physical therapists, it's our responsibility to nurture people in those same ways and lead from a place of acceptance and love versus shame and guilt and negativity. So it's not about being like, oh, toxic positivity all the time. It's really about listening, validating a person's experience, hearing what they're saying and saying back to them. That must have been so hard to hear that. That sucks. It sucks to hear that the way your body is shaped is the cause to all your problems. It does. It's just an awful thing that I think we have in our healthcare system as it pertains to pain that needs to be eliminated.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Strong bias there.
Your bias is the same as mine. Yeah. And especially if it's something that then, you know, there can be blame placed too. Like, oh, you should have been doing more strengthening, or you should have been doing this. And so that, yes, that is really, really heavy to hear. So I agree with you. I think those are perfect take home points. You know, start asking questions, be intentional with what you say. And I think your point at the beginning too, of not assuming that people may have body image issues, you know, maybe that's just something you ask. How do you feel about your body?
It sounds
tough, but that's just, it's just a question. Like, let's get an idea, a feel for where you're at with that. Yeah. And, let's see, what else was I, what were our other points?
I think that's a really valid statement, is like, how do you feel about your body? Because it opens the door for, an openness about what they're actually experiencing, right? And it's an open-ended question. There's no presumption behind it. It's just, how do you feel about your body? Mm-hmm. You know, after hearing all that stuff about your body, what do you think, what does that make you feel? Mm-hmm. And I mean, the times that I've asked questions like that, I would say the majority of the time people get upset, you know? It's heartbreaking to hear that your body, the way it's shaped, the way that it moves, the way that it looks, is not, I'm going to use the word designed well enough to support the things you want to do. I mean, it's just such bullshit. It's such bullshit. And so I think as providers, we have to be willing to call the bullshit where it is, while also being able to sit with the fact that this person in front of us is likely been dealt a very difficult hand, and not try to change that they had those experiences, but be there to show them a new possibility.
100% agree.
That was, yeah.
Very well summed up.
I'm like, so well spoken.
Yes, you are on point. Yes, the new possibility. I love that.
Yes.
If you have any questions about this, any questions about specific times that you've been unsure of how to respond, send us messages. Or if you have any other ideas on things that you would like us to talk about, please send us either one of us a message. Anything else to add in?
Yeah, I just want to say, if you aren't sure if some of the things you've been told are contributing to your issue, Steph and I both offer virtual therapy services, and you can absolutely reach out to us for help. So don't hesitate to do so. Send us an email. I will link our emails in the show notes and our websites and all of that jazz. Know that there is a better option for many, many people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Better option for sure for you. And if you're a PT, also for your patients. And these are hard conversations, 100%. And it takes a lot of practice. I'm still not, I wouldn't say I'm great at them, but trying to get better every day. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you can do. I mean, I can't say I'm perfect at it either. There will always be times in my conditioned self where I will respond and then come back to it later and be like, shouldn't have said that. But it's about continued refinement and continued work on hard listening and attention to human beings and their suffering. So, yeah. All right. You end these better than I do.
We will. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate your time. And we'll see you next week. See you.
Yes.
Well, air quotes. See you next week.